Thanks to our sponsor, Ecotricity. Ecotricity is New Zealand's only carbon zero certified electricity retailer. They offset all emissions sourced from wind, hydro and solar. Find out more at ecotricity.co.nz. Hello and welcome to a special episode of How to Save the World. My name is Tim Batt.
And I'm Waveney Worth, a special version of me.
Yeah, we're both special today. We're our happiest selves because we decided to embark today on a new kind of episode that we want to do regularly down the track, maybe once every sort of 10 or so eps. But obviously a big focus for us with this podcast is speaking the truth, getting the facts out there, giving you a good realistic picture of what's actually happening on the planet with all our separate systems and how they intersect. But we also want to empower people and get people to feel like they can affect change and not be paralyzed by the totality of the bad stuff that's happening. How do we do that? Well, we decided to do a good news episode because I think it's really important for us to remind ourselves that there have been some huge sustainability and ecological wins in our past, but we've actually managed to solve problems in the past. I mean, the big thing that I'm thinking of is climate change. Everyone sort of thinks it's this big intractable problem. We've got a lot of science, we've got a lot of technology, we've got a lot of smart people, and we've got a track record of being able to fix some of these things. And the genesis of this was that I was hosting an event for a really great, she's a science communicator. She's like a journalist and a writer. Alana Mitchell is her name. She's Canadian. She wrote a book called Seasick. I think the subtitle is Global Ocean in Crisis. She wrote it in 2009. I read it ahead of the talk because I was just sort of like hosting it and she did the big like TED style talk. And it reads like it was written this year. Super relevant stuff. She goes through and sort of breaks down all of the systems that are failing in the ocean as a result of human activity and climate change and all the things we're putting in the air. And super depressing, real grim stuff. And we got to the end of the hour and it was like, you know, really great information, but I just thought that it reminded me of how important it is for us to remind ourselves that we're not helpless in this. We can affect change.
I think it is a really cool thing to focus on. And it's like we've got all of the tools in the toolkit, but sometimes we misplace that toolkit because it's such a dark and stormy day, I guess. But I feel, Tim, that our intention has been to be positive.
Yes.
Every episode, but I think we've really, like some of these episodes, like the palm oil one, the clothing one particularly, I think was pretty, there's just so much going on that we wanted to communicate that isn't great in order to give people a real context. Like this is really why it does matter.
Yeah.
And that context is great. But there's that whole psychology, we were talking about it before, of like for every one negative thing you say, you're supposed to say like 16 positive things. So we've kind of turned that around quite dramatically.
So in an effort to right the ship, we're dedicating this whole episode to just talking about
positive
just
stuff.
A few stories of positive stuff that we've managed to do. Because it should serve as a metaphor that we totally have it in our ability to make huge changes when we need to do it. So, Wave, do you want to kick off? What's one of the big wins that we've had?
We've got three things, haven't we? I've got two, you've got one, yep. So we're going to ping pong it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, because this is the first time we've done it, I don't know if mine fits neatly into the category, but what it is the Colmar Brunton Better Futures Report for 2019. Have you heard of it?
You've told me about it on this podcast.
You talk about you being a geek. Oh my gosh. I'm such a geek with this stuff. I happen to love, this is my favourite report. So Colmar Brunton's New Zealand, what are they called?
Like a polling.
Yes, polling company. They do it for government and everything. And any New Zealander worth their salt would have heard of them.
They're the company that spits out most articles you read in the paper.
Yeah. If there's a statistic involved, then these are the guys. Yeah. And they've on their own back, have decided to put out a report. I think they've been doing it for at least 5 years around consumers and sustainability and business, basically, and just tracking what is going on, what are our attitudes, in order to give businesses the opportunities to really mesh in with where people are at. Really cool, irrelevant statistic for now, but it did amuse me to see that it's women that are more likely to be more sustainably minded, and Māori, refugees and migrants, basically kind of everyone apart from that white middle class male. Me. It's like everybody else all
everyone
around
but
it.
Timbo. Story of my life.
So yeah, statistics is a pretty interesting thing, and the reason I'm putting it here in our good news segment is because for the first time New Zealanders have kind of tipped over this balancing point, and more than half of us now have a high level of concern for climate change, which is huge. And the other thing is, I mean, it's all through this report. It's like the statistics are just through the roof in terms of how quickly
I don't mean to shoot holes too early, but it is so funny to me that your good news is that we're all freaking out about climate change.
Oh, no. Yeah, yes, I see the issue there.
No, it is a good thing. This
okay,
is
how
good
about
news.
How about this one? In the last 12 months, this is an amazing statistic. In the last 12 months, we've had a 12% jump and the number of New Zealanders that are saying that they're highly committed to living sustainable lifestyles.
That's really big.
That's huge, that eh? That is a 12% jump. And that's from 30 to 42. So that's even getting close to 50%.
Yeah. See, that's actually, that's not by 12%. That's 12% more. So as a, if you want to drill into, as a percentage, it's like a third more.
We should have a little.
It's a third more people.
We should have a little emblem that like represents the geek factor, and we could pass it to each other.
Yeah,
because right now
we need
to
make it a sound, though, wouldn't we? For
true.
It to work on the potty.
Yeah, good point.
Woo! Yeah, well, alert!
You've definitely got it in your corner at the moment.
Love math.
So that was my good news. And
it's fantastic.
Yeah, basically, I can elaborate on that report.
Please.
Well, really? Because I was going to say.
Go on, just a point or two.
Now that you've pointed out that my good news is about how much people are freaking out, I realize that some of the other things I have to say are along those
no,
lines.
No, it's good. Don't let my glib jokes derail this very good news. Because the reality is, the thing is happening.
Yeah.
Either way,
yeah.
So it is incredibly good that more people are cognizant of it and starting to take action.
Given one of our human traits is about just wanting to be with the pack,
yeah.
That's why I see this as good news, because that's what we need. We need to be with the pack. And oh, great, the pack's now over the line and it gives us all permission to...
Yes.
Oh, classic is using our own shopping bags. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew that was a good thing to do, and it wasn't till bang, we hit that point and a bit of legislation helped. Almost overnight, we're all happily doing it.
Yeah.
It's just no big deal. And you think, gosh, why couldn't we do that over the last 10 years while we're all thinking about it and all forgetting about it? And it's just because we weren't all doing it.
Yeah.
So that's why I said it's good news. But so the hot topics that they identified in the report are in terms of the things that we care about and the things that are motivating us towards change is plastic in the environment, state of our waterways, and climate change. And there's a huge momentum. This isn't in terms of what they've surveyed, it's more on what they've observed. There's this a huge momentum growing around climate change action.
Cool.
Again, it's something that's becoming normalized. There's avenues now that people can be voting on or joining groups on, making submissions. There's just a lot happening in that space. And actually, this is... The last thing I'm going to say about this report is that, and this was just out of interest actually more than anything, is that they always ask people, it's an open question, I think, or maybe it's just a big list of factors, and they ask people, what is the number one thing that you have deep concern for? And it can be anything. On a society level.
Right.
And typically the things that take it out would be things like cost of living or violence in society, things like that. And this year was the first time that an environmental concern ever took it out as our number one concern. And 72% of New Zealanders say that buildup of plastic in the environment is their number one concern.
Wow.
Now, hang on, Tim, you'll have to help me with the statistic.
Okay.
How does that work? Because the next one is, look at that. The next one is 68%, 67, 67.
It just means that it's not, it's like a multi-choice test, right? That's all that. Is the concern that it's not adding up to 100
for you?
So I guess what it is people are probably saying among your top concerns, I'm assuming, or like, you know, pick your top five.
Oh, like they got to pick more than one.
Yeah, exactly. But that still means that cumulatively, it's in the number one spot,
right.
is buildup of plastic in the environment.
Yeah.
So the question was, beyond the environment and the cost of living, we also express deep concern for our most vulnerable.
That's not the question.
Oh, that's just a statement. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'll give you a paperback. You know how to read these things. But that is, it looks like a huge change as well, year on year. Like, that's massive movement.
Yeah, huge, huge. And so, you know how I said before about that we're increasingly committed to living sustainable lifestyles? Actually, it'd be interesting. I always do this to you. I don't know if you enjoy it or not. I want you to guess.
Guess if I enjoy the guessing.
Yeah, I don't think you do. No, maybe I'll just tell you. there's two keystone behaviours that have really changed in this last year in terms of what people are doing, actually doing. Just, you know, that we say that we're committed to the environment, but in terms of en masse, we've changed two things.
I want to have a run at this.
Okay, good. Go.
Is one of them like diet, how we're eating?
Yes.
And one of them is, I don't know, plastic straws?
No.
It's probably related.
Oh, you got the hard one and missed the easy one.
What's the easy one?
That we've all started using our shopping bags over the last year.
Oh, gotcha.
Because that was exactly. There was a law change.
yeah.
It jumped from, I was hanging around 20% and then it jumped up to 84% last year.
Awesome.
And then, yeah, the other one is the trend towards plant-based diets.
That's me.
Yeah,
I'm in that group.
You are. You actually, look, that's you there. You're statistically represented in that bar.
I am a number.
It used to be, well, actually, it's been growing from, say, 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18.
Take us through some of the numbers. What was it in 2014?
It started on 4%, then it was 5%. Oh, and this is a percentage of
people.
What
is it right now?
It says who always or mostly go meat free. So it was used to be 4%, then 5%, then 6%, then 2017 it was jumped up to 7%, and in 2018 it was 10%.
10% from 4% in 2014.
Yes.
So it's doubled. The amount of people who are doing it has over doubled.
In the last 4 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's a way bigger number than I thought as well. 1 in 10 people in New Zealand are eating
mostly meat-free.
Plant-based diets. Or meat, yeah. Oh, that's not exactly the same as it. It's more vegetarian. But that is, you know, for a country that is, economy is built on
beef and lamb. Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Look out, Fonterra. Change your business model.
So
We're coming for you.
Do I get a pass for that, for my good news?
Absolutely. It's tremendous news.
I like this, Tim.
This is a good thing, isn't it?
Maybe
we should do a little one of these next episode.
Yeah, maybe we just generally try and be more positive people.
Maybe. So my one's kind of very different from yours. And it's an interesting one because, so I'm 31 years old, and people who are roughly my age will have probably the same perception of this issue that I did, which is like, oh yeah, what the hell was up with that thing? Acid rain.
Oh yeah!
Do you remember that?
So retro.
So acid rain was this interesting phenomenon which culturally was really talked about and big, and like I remember there's a Simpsons gag where Homer's jacket dissolves off his back because of acid rain. It's really big in the early 90s and the 80s. It was a huge concern in the 70s and 80s. It's been...
with your age, can you remember that?
I would have been like 10, you know, in the early 90s.
So you do remember it, but it was very, you were very young.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I was born in 87, okay. So I was like 10 years old in 97. So that's the thing. I've kind of had got this vague awareness of it from my childhood, but I remember it looming very large, of it being kind of this big, weird thing that people talked about. And then suddenly... I haven't heard of it in 15 years.
No, this is really interesting. Tell me, because I'm the same. I'm like, we used to talk about that, and now we don't.
Exactly. So And it's the same with the ozone layer, which I could have done as well. The short story is, it feels like we kind of fixed it by banning these things called CFCs. Freon was the, I think that's like the trademark name of it. Mm-hmm. And then they found out it was destroying the ozone layer, and then they banned it, and then the hole in the ozone layer closed up. So it's like, that's a real succinct one. So acid
rain.
Let's
get a scientist in to verify some of that.
I watched some videos on it
scientists. Apologies.
I can tell you what ozone is too. It's three atoms of oxygen.
Pass
there you
that
go.
Geeky thing.
We're about to get very geeky. So acid rain, what was it? It was this thing that's actually been happening since the Industrial Revolution, and it's mainly when you burn a whole bunch of coal and sulfur and nitrogen in huge quantities gets put into the air. And when it mixes with things that are in the air and with water vapor, and in those high concentrations, it creates nitric and sulfuric acid. And so what was happening, and they first started detecting it after doing some scientific experiments in the 60s and 70s, is there were these huge concentrations of acidic precipitation, which is rain or snow or sleet or hail, falling down and having some nightmarish effects. It was stripping trees.
No, I remember
like
that.
Like, it was stripping whole forests.
This is coming out of some very early trial. I remember these images of just the brown trees.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And the other thing that it was doing is it was killing waterways. So there were these lakes. I was reading this interesting article where a guy kind of gave this first-hand account of dropping a mug when he was on a canoe as a child in the 80s down a lake in Canada, and watching it fall all the way to the bottom because it was crystal clear, which you think means it's beautiful water, but it was because it was completely devoid of life because it was around this time of huge acidification of these water bodies because of acid rain. So there was all of this bad shit being thrown up into the air because of industrialization, coal being burned. A lot of it was coming from cars as well before we had catalytic converters on cars.
Pause.
Yes.
Is that something to do with lead or is it something else?
I don't think so, but I'm not a scientist. I don't think it was to do with... Lead might be part of the solution. There might be what's in catalytic converter.
No, we've banned lead in the petrol.
Oh, okay. Oh, maybe.
Like unleaded. It used to just be...
There might be... I think there might be a separate thing from acid rain. Yeah.
Okay. Also, there's a feature in cars now that we didn't used to have.
Catalytic converters, which I remember because my dad is an old automotive mechanic, like that's what he originally trained to do, and he's loved cars his whole life. I remember him talking to me as a kid about the importance of catalytic converters.
Well,
because and there's basically scrubbers on an industrial scale that got put on factories as well, which had the same effect of basically capturing all of these bad things before they went to the atmosphere. So yeah, what was happening is this acidification of all of these huge water bodies, which people were getting super concerned about. It was killing all the fish. It was killing all the microorganisms. They did. So this is a little bit of a side story. This is the geek in me coming out. But they did a bunch of experiments to try and figure out what the heck was going on. Because scientists originally were super baffled by the phenomenon. They didn't really know what was causing it or what was up, but they just knew it was very bad. So they ran some experiments starting in the 60s where they acidified, if that's the word. Mm. They made more acidic some huge bodies of water themselves to observe it. Yeah. And there was one I was reading about in particular where they got a lake, made it as acidic as they possibly could so they could observe the effects of what happens alongside monitoring its pH. So pH is the level of acidity. It goes from 0 to 14. 14 is incredibly alkaline. 0 is the most acidic. 7 is neutral. Water is, it's different if it's in the ocean or a clean body of water, but it's about 6.8. So it's close to neutral, but slightly more acidic than neutral. So they were trying to like bring this lake down to about 5. So it's quite acidic and see what happens. And they just kept dumping acid in there. And they did all the math. They knew how much to expect to put it in to change the pH level of the lake. And it wasn't happening. Huh. It was like they ran out of acid trying to do it.
Gosh.
And they were going, what the hell is going on here? They deduced from that, the scientific team in the 60s, that there were microorganisms which were essentially eating. There was bacteria eating the acid. And from that, they managed to figure out that these lakes had this incredible natural defense against their own acidification. So this acid rain phenomenon had a solution, which was a totally natural one. There were living organisms and the like that could repair them if we could give it the chance to do it. And so these findings, like coupled with a lot of other scientific findings at the time, led to legislation. There was a huge amount of money put into researching this. It was actually the most comprehensive study, I think, scientific study ever, which was kicked off by the Jimmy Carter, who was president in 1980, and then Reagan, who came along after him, actually upped the amount of money they were spending, which seems crazy if you kind of, you know, based on the perception of what Reagan did. So he raised the annual budget to $100 million of 1982 dollars to this program called the National Acid Precipitation Assessment Program. And part of the reason why they got so riled up about it and dedicated so much money to figuring it out is because it was having like international relations scuffles. So the
yeah, because it goes
States
over the border.
That's the
yeah,
thing, right?
Yeah,
because it's going into the atmosphere essentially in cloud form and traveling everywhere. So the states were pointing their finger at Canada, going, "Your coal burning plants in, I think it was Ontario, are floating over here and destroying forests in that northern bit of the United States." So they looked into it, and it turns out that was kind of true, but the United States was pushing way more of this bad shit into Canada. So they actually had this a series of bilateral negotiations and ended up signing some joint legislation and managed to sign this pact between the United States and Canada, which in, from memory was like eventually signed in 1990, to ban a whole bunch of stuff going into the air. And they amended the Clean Air Act, which I think was originally signed in 1960, and they made a bunch of changes to it. And they literally solved this problem of acid rain.
Did it take time? How long did the stuff stay in the atmosphere
for?
Well,
this is, okay, so this is really interesting, and this is something that gives me a lot of hope. I just want to make sure I've got the bit in front of me. I don't have the exact time frame, but this is from the Environmental Defense Foundation, and I'll chuck a link to this page that I got it from in the show notes. So this is directly from them. Sulfur emissions went down faster than predicted and at 1/4 of the projected cost. Since its launch, cap and trade for acid rain has been regarded widely as effective at solving the problem to a flexible, innovative way. So they had a cap and trade program where you basically just go, this is the maximum amount of this kind of pollutant we're allowed in the air, and companies within each other can buy and sell credits if they really need them, and then over time you bring down that ceiling of the total amount. And it worked way better and faster and cheaper than they were expecting to solve this problem.
Awesome.
Which just made me think, because there's all these results that always come out where scientists are freaking out, particularly at the moment, around the rate that the ice shelves are melting, because it's a lot faster than predicted.
Yep.
That variance in scientific prediction goes both ways. So, and
true.
So if we just start doing stuff, we're probably going to have some really unexpected huge wins.
Awesome stuff.
Where things are going to happen quicker and cheaper and better than we anticipated, because we don't know how all of these systems interact very well.
But we do know that just everything's connected. And that's where some cool wins come in.
And if you leave stuff alone in nature, generally, it's phenomenal at fixing itself.
Oh,
so
very cool. I've got a burning question.
Oh, yeah?
You sound like you've got more.
Well, just two little things.
Yes.
Firstly, sadly, the problem hasn't been completely solved. It was like almost completely, well, it has almost completely been solved in the United States and in Canada. Sadly, it still persists in China, particularly at the moment, because of their booming economy, huge population, and the fact that they've got slightly more sulfuric coal than normal, and in Russia as well, because both those countries have pretty poor regulations. And the other thing that, it doesn't really matter actually, it's a huge success story in terms of like a big environmental problem.
Yeah, I love
that. That was so looming large over everyone. They researched it, changed some laws, and fixed it, and now we don't even think about it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, you actually answered my burning question, because it was like, well, those are just two countries. What about the rest of the world? But so, what about the rest of the world? All of the other countries that are industrialized, like all of Africa, South America, do you know?
So China and Russia are the ones that get mentioned the most, because I imagine they've got the largest coal reserves.
Oh, that's right? It's just coal.
Well, that's what a huge amount of the problem is, yeah.
So if countries are running their factories and stuff based on different power sources.
And,
so
like, and this is the good news about that, like particularly with China. China are crazy for solar panels and have been for the last few years. Like they're producing more solar panels than anywhere else on the planet. And because they've got this authoritarian infrastructure, if they decide to focus on something, they can have this massive scale. So they get these all these benefits that accrue by producing stuff at scale, that things are really cheap on an individual level if you're making a billion of them, you know? And that's kind of what they're doing with solar at the moment. So there will be a natural conclusion to this globally, because coal is over time just a way less attractive option than solar is becoming for energy generation. So even in the places where it's still an issue now, I think it won't be for that much longer because of that reason.
Love it.
A nerdy approach to acid rain. But yeah, crazy, eh? Because it was just like this thing everyone talked about for ages and no one's thought about it for a long time.
This episode is brought to you by Ecotricity, New Zealand's only power company that's 100% renewable and carbon zero certified. It's Ecotricity's mission to provide Kiwi homes and businesses with 100% pure renewable power. By choosing Ecotricity, you're supporting the development of new renewable energy and proving New Zealand's economy can grow without costing the earth. Find out more and sign up at ecotricity.co.nz.
So, Wave.
Okay.
What is your third one?
Taking us home on number three, my third cool thing is Happen Films.
Oh, yes.
So these guys, if you're already... This is actually kind of... I was going to say the acid test. It must have just been in my head for some reason. This is like the acid test to see if you're already in the green bubble or not, I think. Because if you are, you would probably have heard of these guys. They're pretty huge. They've got over 122,000 followers on Facebook. It's two people, primarily, Jordan Osman and Antoinette Wilson. He's Aussie, she's Kiwi. They're New Zealand based at the moment. And they create stories. They call it Stories for a Changing World. And they're all solution-focused documentaries, and they're all inspiring and hopeful. And you can go onto their website and see. They're all beautifully made. Like, they are a true pleasure to behold. They've got on their website, they've got a range of like really nice clickable short filmy type stuff. They've often got new content, and then through to feature films. They've actually done two feature films. Their latest film was a 30-minute documentary called Fools and Dreamers, and I went along to the Auckland premiere of that a couple of months ago, and it's about a guy who's such good talent, Hugh Wilson, who's he's a old botanist, and he's been living on a nature reserve that he helped create called Hinawai on the Banks Peninsula. And when that piece of land was originally bought, it was back in the 1960s, and this is a sub story of a good story, I've just realized. And they basically were wanting a regeneration project, and they want, because the Banks Peninsula used to be completely forested, and it hasn't been great land for farming. It's been quite tough for the farmers and for the land, and there's been a lot of soil loss and just a lot of erosion, and people would love to see the Banks Peninsula more forested, but so many people have just felt like, well, it's too late. We've sort of ruined that opportunity now. It's too hard to get the trees established again. And so him and his team set off to see if they could actually create a forest again, over a huge block of land, reaching from the ridges. You know how Banks Peninsula is an old volcanic area, and actually, like, especially when you're from Auckland, like, the scale is just out of the ballpark. Here it's like we call all of our maunga like mountains, you know, Mount Eden and stuff, but you know, the scale there is huge. So from these old what used to be enormous mountains, about I think, at least 10 times higher than what they are now. These are just rounded relics of what they are. So from the top of those mountains down to the coast, sloping all the way down, he got this bit of land and he said, we're going to use gorse to regenerate, because gorse is a nitrogen fixer. It's the big enemy of pastoral land farmers. It's why it's so demonized. Because
is that for that reason?
Yes.
So when you say a fixer, do you mean it draws nitrogen out, like it uses it for food? Which stops.
No. To grow things, you need nitrogen and carbon in the soil, and that's what composting is all about. You're grabbing a combination of those two things to create your compost.
Okay.
And so you can do all of the hard work of getting. So nitrogen might be cow poo or seaweed or coffee or food waste. All are quite rich things. So you can spend your time running around grabbing all these things so you can have a great garden, or you can get some plants that fix nitrogen. Because what's the air made out of, isn't it actually mostly nitrogen?
Mm-hmm.
It is, isn't it?
I think so. Isn't it like 93%?
Yeah, there's one, isn't it? That's huge. I think it's that one. where's the geek now? Somehow we're missing the geek in the room.
Hydrogen now.
No.
Anyway, yes.
I don't know. Anyway, that's in the atmosphere. And so that's what gorse and other nitrogen fixing plants do, is they take the nitrogen right out of the atmosphere, which plants usually can't do. And that's where they get their nitrogen from. And then they make that available in the soil for all of the other plants. And so gorse, because it's so prickly, allows basically a nursery environment underneath it for the native seedlings to come up. Nothing can eat them. The wind can't blow them over.
Shied away.
Yeah. And so it's this really safe space. And then the trees grow up and gorse can't survive in the shade. And so the gorse just all dies.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that is so interesting.
So that's what...
And what a cool cycle.
Oh, very cool. And so heaps of people use this now. As a really quick, easy technique of restoring native forest. Mm-hmm. And so the movie's called, the documentary, I should say, 30 Minutes, is called Fools and Dreamers, because when he let the community know that that's the worst plan, there was all these editorials in the paper, like people were outraged. Yeah. And I can understand that farmers are going to be legitimately concerned that all of that seed, gorse seed head, would be going over to their land. So yeah. I can see that was a reasonable response. But now, what is that, 40 years on, it's this gem of the community, and there's this beautiful connection now. Everybody loves it because it's a reserve for everybody.
Gorse is like their their regional emblem.
Yeah. there's waterfalls now because all the water's retained. Like, you know how trees just completely change a landscape?
Yeah,
and so what was a dry, harsh landscape is now just full of birds and beautiful waterways. It's something like, I don't know, like 100 waterfalls or something on the Hinnamwai Reserve. And it's open to the public. So if you go down that way, you can... go for walks.
And it was all thanks to gorse.
Yeah, and the lovely Hugh Wilson. So anyway, that's an example of the sort of work that Happen Films do. And just all of their work they do is awesome. And if you're looking, I thought I would include them in this segment, because if you are looking for inspiration, they've just got dozens of really cool stories. And you might be able to find a particular aspect of sustainability that you're interested in too. There's profiles on people, say their thing might be composting toilets, or a family of five living zero waste or whatever. So, yeah, very cool.
That's so cool. It's so great that there's basically production houses now just pumping out exclusively. I mean, especially for them doing good news stuff, but just environmental stuff is good by itself. Mm. But then the positive subset of that as a genre.
Mm.
It's what we need, eh?
Totally. They did their last feature film was 2018, and it was Living the Change.
I remember seeing that.
Have
I
you?
Didn't see the movie, sorry, but I seen the promo for it.
Yeah. Mike Joy, who we've had on the show, was on that. Yeah. And yours truly.
You were in it.
Yeah, I was in it.
You're a movie star.
Yeah. Just quietly.
Tim. That is very cool. So, should we close the book on this positive episode?
I'm just feeling so brimming with positivity that I couldn't possibly fit anything more in.
I'm with you. So, we'll do more of this, eh?
Yeah.
This is good. It's worked. It's good to discuss the wins and to remind everyone of what is possible. We can do some big old things.
Humans are cool.
Humans are really cool. We've got to look up, not down.
That's right.
I think I'm paraphrasing something Greta said, but I don't know. I've been getting pretty Greta heavy recently, absorbing a lot of videos. She's so cool.
She's awesome.
Okay, thank you very much for listening to this episode. If you enjoy the podcast, please join us on Facebook at facebook.com/howtosavetheworld. Chuck us a rating, if you could, on iTunes or however you listen to us. And tell a mate who might be interested in environmental or sustainability stuff. It's really useful for us to grow our numbers and get the word out there. So it'd be lovely if you were part of that journey with us. We will see you in the next episode. Until then, stay positive, live the change.
Ka kite.
Change the world. Thanks again to our sponsor, Ecotricity, New Zealand's only provider of 100% renewable and carbon zero certified electricity. Find out how to switch your home or business at ecotricity.co.nz.